Chapter 37. Engine assembly and dynamometer testing. Details, details, details. Successful engine assembly depends on getting all of the details right. Where to start? Start when all parts have been purchased or prepared for assembly. When starting to assemble the engine, be sure to have all of the instructions from all of the parts used. Read all instructions that are included with all new parts and gaskets. Often, very important information or suggested specifications are included and may be at the end of the instructions. Understand. Be sure to fully understand everything that is stated in the instructions. If unsure as to what is meant, ask a knowledgeable technician or call the company to be sure that all procedures are clearly understood. This is especially important if working on an engine that is not very common, such as the Audi and Volkswagen W8. This engine has 7 rotating shafts, including 4 overhead camshafts, 2 counter-rotating balance shafts, and 1 crankshaft. A Ford 1.0-liter 3-cylinder is also unique. See Figure 37.1. Follow. Be sure to follow all of the instructions. Do not pick the easy procedures and skip others. Refer to Figure 37.1. A Ford 1.0-liter 3-cylinder engine is different than many small engines and may require detailed service information for proper assembly. Short block preparation. Items to check: the following engine block details should be checked. All passages should be clean and free of rust and debris. All gasket surfaces are properly cleaned and checked for burrs and scratches. All cups and plugs should be installed. The final bore dimension is correct for the piston. The surface finish of the cylinder bore matches with the specified finish required for the piston rings that are going to be used. All sharp edges and burrs have been removed. See Figure 37.2. The main bearing bores, or saddles, are straight and inline. The lifter bores have been honed and checked for proper dimension. Refer to Figure 37.2. Deboring all sharp edges is an important step to achieve proper engine assembly. Refer to Chart 37.1. The surface finish of the block and cylinder head depends on the type of gasket being used. Surface finish: the surface finish is important for the proper sealing of any gasket. Surface too rough: if the surface finish is too rough, the gasket is not able to seal the deep grooves in the surface. Surface too smooth: if the surface finish is too smooth, the gasket can move out of proper location, causing leakage. Surface finish is measured in micro inches, usually abbreviated by using the Greek letter mu and the abbreviation for inches together. The higher the micro inch finish, the rougher the surface. The lower the micro inch finish, the smoother the surface. The specification for surface finish is usually specified in roughness average, or RA. See Chart 37.1 for the acceptable roughness for the head gasket surface. Check the instruction sheet that comes with the gasket for the specified surface finish. Checking surfaces before assembly: all surfaces of an engine should be clean and straight and have the specified surface finish and flatness. Flatness is a measure of how much the surface varies in any 6-inch span. An industry standard maximum limit for flatness is usually 0.002 of an inch. If the surface is not flat, the gaskets are not able to seal properly. Preparing the block for studs: using studs instead of head bolts for cylinder heads is recommended for all high-performance applications. However, studs should not be used on a street-driven vehicle engine, because the studs would prevent the cylinder heads from being removed, unless the engine is first removed from the vehicle. Most vehicles do not have enough room under the hood to allow the cylinder heads to be moved upward far enough for removal. Studs provide for more accurate and consistent torque loading and clamping force. For example, when a bolt is used to attach a cylinder head, it is being twisted and pulled at the same time. In comparison, a stud is only being stretched. Also, a stud uses a fine thread for the retaining nut, which allows for more precise torque readings. See Figure 37.3. The use of studs for the main bearing saddles helps main cap alignment, because the torque applied is more consistent and there is less chance of the bearing cap moving during the tightening operation. See Figure 37.4. Screw the studs into the block, but finger tighten only. Do not tighten a stud more than finger tight. A nut should not be used to double nut a stud to keep it in position. Note: the tightening torque in the installation instructions is for the nut and not the stud itself. In most cases, a thread locker, such as Loctite 242, can be used on the threads of the stud being inserted into the block to make the installation of the stud more permanent. Refer to Figure 37.3, studs installed in the block, replacing head bolts. Refer to Figure 37.4, main bearing studs installed on a V8 block. Tech tip. Be aware of BMW engine procedures. If rebuilding a BMW engine, check service information carefully because most BMW engines require that threaded inserts be installed in all head bolt threads. Performing this operation can increase the cost and time needed. Always follow all recommended service procedures on the engine being serviced. See Figure 37.5. Refer to Figure 37.5, a Cadillac Northstar engine being rebuilt. The shop doing the work is installing helicoils in all threaded cylinder head bolt holes as a precaution. Using duct tape to cover the engine helps prevent aluminum chips from getting into passages. Refer to Figure 37.6. A thread chaser is the preferred tool to clean threaded holes because it cleans without removing metal, compared to a tap. Caution: if a thread locker is used, be sure to immediately install the main bearing caps before the compound cures to help avoid misalignment. Preparing threaded holes. Step 1. All threads in the block should be thoroughly cleaned. Many experts recommend using a thread chaser, because a tap could cut and remove metal. A chaser restores the threads without removing metal. See Figure 37.6. Step 2. See heck that all liquid has been removed from the bolt holes in the block. If liquid is in the bottom of a blind hole, the block can be cracked when the bolt is installed. Tech tip. Keep the engine covered. Using a large plastic trash bag is an excellent way to keep the engine clean when storing it between work sessions. Refer to Figure 37.7. Using a plastic trash bag is an excellent way to keep the engine clean during all stages of assembly. Cylinder head preparation. Items to check. Check the following details on the cylinder heads. The surface finish of the fire deck is as specified for the head gasket type to be used. All valves should be checked for leakage by pouring mineral spirits into the intake and exhaust parts and looking for a leakage past the valves. All valve springs should be checked for even spring pressure and installed height. Check for proper pushrod length. If the cylinder heads has been machined and/or the block deck machined, the pushrods may be too long. If the pushrods are too long, the rocker arm geometry is not correct. One problem that can occur with incorrect rocker arm geometry is spring bind, which can cause severe engine damage. If replacement rocker arms are used, be sure that the geometry and total lift is okay. Trial assembly. Short block. Before performing final engine assembly, the wise technician checks that all parts fit and work. This is especially important if using a different crankshaft that changes the stroke. See Figure 37.8. Valve train. Another place where a trial fit is needed is in the valve train. Some timing chain mechanisms require more space than the stock component, so some machining may be needed. If the rocker arms have been upgraded to roller rockers, these should be installed and checked that the tip of the roller rests at the center of the valve stem. See Figure 37.9. Case study. Valve springs can vary. A technician was building a small block Chevrolet V8 and found that many of the valve springs did not have the same tension. Using a valve spring tester, the technician visited a local parts store and measured all of the valve springs that the store had in stock. The technician selected and purchased the 16 valve springs that were within specification and within a very narrow range of tension. Although having all valve springs equal may or may not affect engine operation, the technician was pleased that all of the valve springs were equal. Summary. The complaint: a technician discovered that valve springs did not all have the same tension. The cause: due to manufacturing tolerances, valve springs can vary in tension. The correction: the technician tested all available springs and selected those that were the most equal in tension. Refer to Figure 37.8. A trial assembly showed that some grinding of the block is needed to provide clearance for the counterweight of the crankshaft. Also, notice that the engine has been equipped with studs for the four bolt main bearing caps. Refer to Figure 37.9. A typical high-performance aftermarket rocker arm that is equipped with needle roller bearings at the valve stem end. A caged needle bearing at the pivot shaft end reduces friction, which increases engine horsepower and improves fuel economy. If there is a problem, further investigation is needed because the pushrods may be too long due to machining of the block deck and/or cylinder head. Rotate the engine and check for proper clearance throughout the entire opening and closing of the valves. Use a feeler gauge between the coils of the valve spring to check for coil bind. If coil bind occurs, a different camshaft or valve spring should be used. Check the angle between heads. During the trial assembly, use a gauge to check that the heads are at the correct angle to ensure proper intake manifold gasket sealing. If the angle is not correct, then remachining of the head or block is needed. See Figure 37.12. Tech tip. Fogging oil and assembly lube. When assembling an engine, the parts should be coated with a light oil film to keep them from rusting. This type of oil is commonly referred to as fogging oil and is available in spray cans. See Figure 37.10. During engine assembly, the internal parts should be lubricated. While engine oil or grease could be used, most experts recommend the use of a specific lubricant designed for engine assembly. This lubricant, designed to remain on the parts and not drip or run, is called assembly lube. See Figure 37.11. Refer to Figure 37.10. Fogging oil is used to cover bare metal parts when the engine is being stored to prevent corrosion. Refer to Figure 37.11. Engine assembly lube is recommended to be used on engine parts during assembly. Refer to Figure 37.12, an angle gauge being used to check the angle between the cylinder heads on the small block Chevrolet V8 engine. Final short block assembly. Block preparation: all surfaces should be checked for damage resulting from the machining processes. Items that should be done before assembly begins include the following. 1. The block, including the oil gallery passages, should be thoroughly cleaned. See Figures 37.13 and 37.14. 2. All threaded bolt holes should be chamfered. 3. All threaded holes should be cleaned with a thread chaser before final assembly. Refer to Figure 37.13. The best way to thoroughly clean cylinders is to use soap, or detergent, water, and a large washing brush. This method floats the machining particles out of the block and washes them away. Refer to Figure 37.14. All oil galleries should be cleaned using soap, or detergent, water, and a long oil gallery cleaning brush. Refer to Figure 37.15. This engine uses many cup plugs to block off coolant and oil passages, as well as a large plug over the end of the camshaft bore. Installing cups and plugs: oil gallery plugs should be installed using sealant on the threads. Caution: avoid using Teflon tape on the threads of oil gallery plugs or coolant drain plugs. The tape is often cut by the threads, and thin strips of the tape are then free to flow through the oil galleries where the tape can cause a clog, thereby limiting lubricating engine oil to important parts of the engine. Core holes left in the external block wall are machined and sealed with soft core plugs or expansion plugs, also called freeze plugs or Welsh plugs. Soft plugs are of two designs. Convex type. The core hole is counterbored with a shoulder. The convex soft plug is placed in the counterbore, convex side out. It is driven in with a fitted seating tool. This causes the edge of the soft plug to enlarge to hold it in place. A convex plug should be driven in until it reaches the counterbore of the core plug hole. Cup type. This most common type fits into a smooth, straight hole. The outer edge of the cup is slightly bell-mouthed. The bell mouth causes it to tighten when it is driven into the hole to the correct depth with a seating tool. An installed cup type soft plug is shown in Figure 37.15. A cup plug is installed about 0.02 to 0.05 of an inch, or 0.5 to 1.3 millimeters, below the surface of the block, using sealant to prevent leaks. See Figure 37.16. Cam bearings: a cam bearing installing tool is required to insert the new cam bearing without damaging the bearing. A number of tool manufacturers design and sell cam bearing installation tools. Their common feature is a shoulder on a bushing that fits inside the cam bearing, with a means of keeping the bearing aligned as it is installed. Figure 37.16. Sealer should be applied to the cup plug before being driven into the block. Frequently asked question: what causes premature bearing failure? According to a major manufacturer of engine bearings, the major causes of premature, or shortly after installation, bearing failure include the following: dirt at 45%, misassembly at 13%, misalignment at 13%, lack of lubrication at 11%, overloading or lugging at 10%, corrosion at 4%, and other at 4%. Many cases of premature bearing failure may result from a combination of several of these items. Therefore, to help prevent bearing failure, keep everything as clean as possible. The bearing is placed on the bushing of the tool and rotated to properly align the oil hole. The bearing is then forced into the bearing bore of the block by either a pulling screw or a slide hammer. A pulling screw type of tool is illustrated in Figure 37.17. The installed bearing must be checked to ensure that it has the correct depth and that the oil hole is indexed with the oil passage in the block. No additional service is required on cam bearings that have been properly installed. The opening at the back of the camshaft is closed with a cup plug. Measuring main bearing clearance: The main bearings are properly fit before the crankshaft is lubricated or turned. The oil clearance of both main and connecting rod bearings is set by selectively fitting the bearings. In this way, the oil clearance can be adjusted to within 0.0005 inch of the desired clearance. Caution: avoid touching bearings with bare hands. The oils on your fingers can start corrosion of the bearing materials. Always wear protective cloth or rubber gloves to avoid the possibility of damage to the bearing surface. Bearings are usually made in 0.010, 0.020, and 0.030 of an inch undersize for use on reground journals. See Figure 37.18 for a typical main bearing set. The crankshaft bearing journals should be measured with a micrometer to select the required bearing size. Each of the main bearing caps only fits one location and the caps must be positioned correctly. The bearings and bearing saddles must be clean and dry. The correct size bearings should be placed in the block and cap, making sure that the bearing tang locks into its slot. The upper main bearing has an oil feed hole. The lower bearing does not have an oil hole. Lower the crankshaft squarely so that it does not damage the thrust bearing. Carefully rest the clean crankshaft in the block on the upper main bearings. After making sure that there is no oil on the crank journal of the bearing, place a strip of plastic gauge, or gauging plastic, on each main bearing journal. Install the main bearing caps and tighten the bolts to specifications. Remove each cap and check the width of the plastic gauge with the markings on the gauge envelope, as shown in Figure 37.19. The width of the plastic strip indicates the oil clearance. Refer to Figure 37.18, typical main bearing set. Note that the upper halves are grooved for better oil flow and the lower halves are plain for better load support. This bearing set uses the center main bearing for thrust control. Notice that the upper bearing set has the holes for oil, whereas the lower set does not. 426. Correcting bearing clearance. Oil clearance is normally run from 0.0005 to 0.002 of an inch. The oil clearance can be reduced by 0.001 of an inch by replacing both bearing shells with bearing shells that are of an 0.001 inch undersize. The clearance can be reduced by 0.0005 of an inch by replacing only one of the bearing shells with a bearing shell that is 0.001 of an inch smaller. This smaller bearing shell should be placed in the engine block side of the bearing, or the upper shell. Oil clearance can be adjusted accurately using this procedure. Try to avoid mismatching the bearing shells by more than a 0.001 of an inch difference in size. Refer to Figure 37.19. The width of the plastic gauging strip determines the oil clearance of the main bearing. An alternate method of determining oil clearance includes careful measurement of the crankshaft journal and bearings after they are installed. The main housing bore caps are torqued to specifications. Refer to Figure 37.20, lip type rear main bearing seal in place in the rear main bearing cap. The lip should always be pointing toward the inside of the engine. Tech tip 1-3. When engine technicians are talking about clearances and specifications, the unit of measure most often used is thousandths of an inch, 0.001 of an inch. Therefore, a clearance expressed as 1-3 would actually be a clearance of 0.001 to 0.003 of an inch. The same applies to parts of a thousandth of an inch. For example, a specification of 0.0005 to 0.0015 of an inch would be spoken of as simply being 1/2 to 1 1/2. The unit of a thousandth of an inch is assumed, and this method of speaking reduces errors and misunderstandings. Note: most engine clearance specifications fall within 1 to 3 thousandths of an inch. The written specification could be a misprint. Therefore, if the specification does not fall within this general range, double-check the clearance value using a different source. Lip seal installation: seals are always used at the front and rear of the crankshaft. Overhead cam engines may also have a seal at the front end of the camshaft and at the front end of an auxiliary accessory shaft. Either a lip seal or a rope seal is used in these locations. See Figure 37.20. The rear crankshaft oil seal is installed after the main bearings have been properly fit. The lip seal may be molded in a steel case or it may be molded around a steel stiffener. The counterbore or guide that supports the seal must be thoroughly clean. In most cases, the back of the lip seal is dry when it is installed. Occasionally, a manufacturer recommends the use of sealants behind the seal. Check service information for the specified sealing instructions. The lip of the seal should be well lubricated before the shaft and cap are installed. See Figures 37.21 and 37.22. Caution: Teflon seals should not be lubricated. This type of seal should be installed dry. When the engine is first started, some of the Teflon transfers to the crankshaft, to create a Teflon-to-Teflon surface. Even touching the seal with your hands could remove some of the outer coating on the seal and cause a leak. Carefully read, understand, and follow the installation instructions that come with the seal. Refer to Figure 3721. Always use the proper driver to install a main seal. Never pound directly on the seal. Refer to Figure 3722. The rear seal for this engine mounts to a retainer plate. The retainer is then bolted to the engine block. Rope seal installation. Some older engines use rope-type seals at both the front and rear of the crankshaft. Rope-type seals, usually called braided fabric seals, are sometimes used as rear crankshaft oil seals. Rope-type oil seals must be compressed tightly into the groove so that no oil can leak behind them. With the crankshaft removed, the upper half of the rope seal is put in a clean groove and compressed by rolling a round object against it to force it tightly into the groove. A piece of pipe, a large socket, or even a hammer handle can be used for this. When the seal is fully seated in the groove, the ends that extend above the parting surface are cut to be flush with the surface using a sharp single-edge razor blade or a sharp tool specially designed to cut the seal. Some technicians find that leaving a little of the seal higher than the bearing cap creates a better seal, because when the bearing cap is installed and tightened, the extra seal length forces the rope seal further into the groove. See Figure 3723. Refer to Figure 3723. Many engine builders prefer to stagger the parting lines of a rope-type seal. Crankshaft installation. The main bearing caps and crankshaft should be removed after checking for proper bearing clearance. The surface of the bearings should then be given a thin coating of oil or assembly lubricant to provide initial lubrication for engine startup. Install the crankshaft using the following steps. Step 1. The crankshaft should be carefully placed in the bearings to avoid damage to the thrust bearing surfaces. Step 2. The bearing caps are installed with their identification numbers correctly positioned. The caps were originally machined in place, so they can only fit correctly in their original position. Step 3. The main bearing cap bolts are tightened finger tight, and the crankshaft is rotated. It should rotate freely. Thrust bearing clearance. Tighten all main bearing cap bolts to factory specification except for the bearing cap that is used for thrust, usually the center or the rear cap. Pry the crankshaft forward and rearward to align the cap half of the thrust bearing with the block saddle half. Most engine specifications for thrust bearing clearance, also called crankshaft end play, can range from 0.002 to 0.012 of an inch, or 0.02 to 0.3 millimeters. This clearance or play can be measured with a feeler gauge, or dial indicator. See Figure 3724. If the clearance is too great, oversized main thrust bearings may be available for the engine. Semi-finished bearings may have to be purchased and machined to size to restore proper tolerance. Note, some engines use a separate replaceable thrust bearing. See Figure 3725. Main bearing tightening procedure. Tighten the main bearing caps to the specified assembly torque, and in the specified sequence. The procedure specified usually includes tightening the main bearing cap bolts in three stages. Torque to 1/3 of the specified torque. Then, tighten to 2/3 of the specified torque. Finally, tighten the bolts to the factory specified torque. Many manufacturers require that the crankshaft be pried for ward or rearward during the main bearing tightening process. The crankshaft should turn freely after all main bearing cap bolts are fully torqued. Refer to Figure 3724. A dial indicator is being used to check the crankshaft end play, known as thrust bearing clearance. Always follow the manufacturer's recommended testing procedures. Refer to Figure 3725, a thrust bearing insert being installed before the crankshaft is installed. Crankshaft rotating torque, it should never require over 5 pound-feet, or 6.75 Newton-meters, of torque to rotate the crankshaft. An increase in the torque needed to rotate the crankshaft is often caused by a foreign particle that was not removed during cleanup. It may be on the bearing surface, on the crankshaft journal, or between the bearing and saddle. Tech tip. Use a long bolt to hold the camshaft. To help install a camshaft without harming the cam bearings, install a long bolt into one of the end threaded holes in the camshaft. Then tilt the engine vertically so that gravity causes the camshaft to fall straight down while holding onto the camshaft using the long bolt. Refer to Figure 3726. Installing a camshaft is easier if the engine is vertical so gravity can help, and this method reduces the possibility of damaging the cam bearings. Installing the camshaft. Pre-lubrication. When the camshaft is installed, the lobes must be coated with a special lubricant that contains moly disulfide. This special lube helps to ensure proper initial lubrication to the critical cam lobe sections of the camshaft. Many manufacturers recommend multiviscosity engine oil, such as SAE 5W30 or SAE 10W30. Some camshaft manufacturers recommend using straight SAE 30 or SAE 40 engine oil and not a multiviscosity oil for the first oil fill. Some manufacturers also recommend the use of an anti-wear additive, such as zinc dithiophosphate, ZDP. Tech tip. Two choices if using flat bottom lifters. An old or rebuilt engine that uses flat bottom lifters must use one of two lubricants. 1. Oils that contain at least 0.15% or 1,500 parts per million, or ppm, of zinc in the form of ZDDP. Oils that contain this much zinc are designed for off-road use only and in a vehicle that does not have a catalytic converter, such as racing oils. If the vehicle is equipped with a catalytic converter, replace the camshaft and lifters with roller type, so that newer oils with lower levels of zinc can be used. 2. Use a newer oil and an additive such as A. GM engine oil supplement known as EOS, part number 1, 0, 5, 2, 3, 6, 7, or part number 8, 8, 8, 6, 2, 5, 8, 6. B. CompCam's camshaft break-in oil additive, part number 1, 5, 9. C. Crane Cam's moly paste, part number 9, 9, 0, 0, 2-1. D. Crane Cam's Superlube oil additive, part number 9, 9, 0, 0, 3-1. E. Lumati assembly lube, part number 9, 9, 0, 1, 0. F. Mel Lube camshaft tube oil additive, part number M-1, 0, 0, 1, 2. G. Other available additives designed to protect the camshaft, see figure 3727. Refer to figure 3727, a commercial additive designed to protect a flat bottom lifter camshaft used in older vehicles when using newer oils that do not have enough ZDDP to protect the camshaft and lifters. Camshaft precautions: whenever repairing an engine, follow these rules regarding the camshaft and lifters. Rule number 1. When installing a new camshaft, always install new valve lifters, or tappets. Rule number 2. When installing new lifters, if the original cam is not excessively worn and if the pushrods all rotate with the original camshaft, the camshaft may be reused. Note: some manufacturers recommend that a new camshaft always be installed when replacing valve lifters. Rule number 3. Never use a hydraulic lifter camshaft with solid lifters or hydraulic lifters with a solid lifter camshaft. Piston and rod installation. Checking piston rings. Before installing the piston assemblies, all piston rings should be checked for proper side clearance and ring gap. See figure 3728. Typical ring gap clearances are about 0.004 inch per inch of cylinder bore. See chart 372. Note: if the gap is greater than recommended, some engine performance is lost. However, too small a gap results in scuffing, because ring ends can be forced together during operation, which forces the rings to scrape the cylinders. If the ring gap is too large, the ring should be replaced with one having the next oversized diameter. If the ring gap is too small, the ring should be removed and filed to make the gap larger. Refer to figure 3728. A feeler gauge is used to check piston ring gap. Refer to chart 372. The approximate ring gap based on the size of the bore in inches. Always check service information for the exact specifications for the engine being assembled. Piston markings. Care must be taken to ensure that the pistons and rods are in the correct cylinder. They must face in the correct direction. There is usually a notch on the piston head indicating the front. Using this correctly positions the piston pin offset toward the right side of the engine. See figure 3729. The connecting rod identification marks on pushrod 4 and 6 cylinder inline engines are normally placed on the camshaft side. On V-type engines, the connecting rod cylinder identification marks are on the side of the rods that can be seen from the bottom of the engine when the piston and rod assemblies are installed in the engine. Make sure the connecting rod has been installed on the piston correctly. The chamfer on the side of the big end should face outward, or toward the crank throw. See figure 3730. Check service information for any special piston and rod assembly instructions. Connecting rod bearing clearance. The rod cap, with the bearing in place, is put on the rod. There are two methods that can be used to check for proper connecting rod bearing clearance. Use plastic gauge following the same procedure discussed for main bearing clearance. Measure the assembled connecting rod big end devices with the bearing installed in the caps torque to specification. Subtract the diameter of the rod journal to determine the bearing clearance. See Figure 3731. Refer to Figure 3729, the notch on a piston should always face toward the front of the engine. Refer to Figure 3730, on V-type engines that use paired rod journals, the side of the rod with the large chamfer should face toward the crank throw, outward. Refer to Figure 3731, an inside micrometer can be used to measure the inside diameter of the big end of the connecting rod with the bearings installed. This dimension subtracted from the rod journal diameter is equal to the bearing clearance. Refer to Figure 3732, one method of piston ring installation showing the location of ring gaps. Always follow the manufacturer's recommended method for the location of ring gaps and for ring gap spacing. Refer to Figure 3733, a gapless ring is made in two pieces that overlap. Note: be certain to check for piston to crankshaft counterweight clearance. Most manufacturers specify a minimum 0.06 of an inch, or 1.5 millimeters. Piston installation. To install a piston, perform the following steps. Step 1. Apply a coating of clean engine oil to the cylinder walls. This oil should be spread over the entire cylinder wall surface by hand. Step 2. Apply oil or assembly lube to the rod bearings. Step 3. Align the piston ring gaps, or ring gap stagger, to the location specified in service information. See Figure 3732. Step 4. Using a squirt-type oil can, squirt oil over the rings and the skirt of the piston. Note: special types of piston rings, overlapping or gapless, are installed dry, without oil. See Figure 3733. Some manufacturers recommend oiling only the oil control ring. Always check the piston ring instruction sheet for the exact procedure. Step 5. The piston ring compressor is then put on the piston to hold the rings in their grooves. See Figures 3734 and 3735. Step 6. Rotate the crankshaft so the crankshaft journal is at the bottom, or BDC, to help prevent the rod from touching the crankshaft when the piston is installed. Step 7. Remove the bearing cap from the rod and install the bearings. Step 8. Install protectors over the rod bolts. These help prevent damage to the crankshaft journal when the piston and rod assembly is installed. See Figure 3736. Step 9. The upper rod bearing should be in the rod and the piston should be turned so that the notch on the piston head is facing the front of the engine. Step 10. The piston and rod assembly is placed in the cylinder through the block deck. The ring compressor must be kept tightly against the block deck as the piston is pushed into the cylinder. The ring compressor holds the rings in their grooves so that they enter the cylinder. See Figure 3737. Step 11. The piston is pushed into the cylinder until the rod bearing is fully seated on the journal. Refer to Figure 3734. This style of ring compressor uses a ratchet to contract the spring band and compress the rings into their grooves. Refer to Figure 3735. This pliers-like tool is used to close the metal band around the piston to compress the rings. An assortment of bands is available to service different size pistons. Refer to Figure 3736. When threaded onto the rod bolts, these guides not only help align the rod, but also protect the threads and hold the bearing shell in place. The soft ends do not damage the crankshaft journals. Refer to Figure 3737, installing a piston using a ring compressor to hold the rings into the ring grooves of the piston, and then using a hammer handle to drive the piston into the bore. Connecting rod bolt protectors have been installed to help prevent possible damage to the crankshaft during piston installation. Connecting rod side clearance. The connecting rods should be checked to ensure that they still have the correct side clearance. This is measured by fitting the correct thickness of feeler gauge between the connecting rod and the crankshaft cheek of the bearing journal. See Figure 3738. If the side clearance is too great, excessive amounts of oil may escape that can cause lower than normal oil pressure. To correct excessive clearance: 1. Weld and regrind or replace the crankshaft. 2. Carefully measure all connecting rods and replace those that are too thin or mismatched. If the side clearance is too small, there may not be enough room for heat expansion. To correct a side clearance that is too small: 1. Regrind the crankshaft. 2. Replace the rods. Refer to Figure 3738. The connecting rod side clearance is measured with a feeler gauge. Tech tip: Tightening tip for rod bearings. Even though the bearing clearances are checked, it is still a good idea to check and record the torque required to rotate the crankshaft with all piston rings dragging on the cylinder walls. The retaining nuts on one bearing should be torqued, and then the torque that is required to rotate the crankshaft should be rechecked and recorded. Follow the same procedure on all rod bearings. If tightening any one of the rod bearing caps causes a large increase in the torque required to rotate the crankshaft, immediately stop the tightening process. Determine the cause of the increased rotating torque using the same method as used on the main bearings. Rotate the crankshaft for several revolutions to ensure that the assembly is turning freely and that there are no tight spots. The rotating torque of the crankshaft with all connecting rod cap bolts fully torqued should be as follows. 4-cylinder engine, 20 pounds-foot maximum, or 88 nanometers. 6-cylinder engine, 25 pounds-foot maximum, or 110 nanometers. 8-cylinder engine, 30 pounds-foot maximum, or 132 nanometers, cylinder head installation. Installing the camshaft for OHC engines, on some overhead camshaft engines, the camshaft is installed before the head is fastened to the block deck. Some engines have the camshaft located directly over the valves. The cam bearings on these engines can be either one piece or split. In other engine types, the camshaft bearings are split to allow the camshaft to be installed without the valves being depressed. The cam bearings and journals are lubricated before assembly. The cam bearing caps must be tightened evenly to avoid bending the camshaft. The valve clearance or lash is checked with the overhead camshaft in place. Some engines use shims under a follower disc, as shown in Figure 3739. On these engine types, the camshaft is turned so that the follower is on the base circle of the cam. The clearance of each bucket follower can then be checked with a feeler gauge. The amount of clearance is recorded and compared with the specified clearance, and then a shim of the required thickness is put in the top of the bucket followers, as shown in Figure 3740. Always follow the vehicle manufacturer's recommended procedures. Head bolt torque sequence. The torque put on the bolts is used to control the clamping force that is applied to the gasket. The clamping force is correct only when the threads are clean and properly lubricated. Caution: always use the specified lubricant on the threads. If SAE 30 engine oil is specified, do not use SA10 W30 or any other viscosity, because using the incorrect viscosity oil can affect the clamping force exerted on the head gaskets. In general, the head bolts are tightened in a specified torque sequence in three steps. The procedure starts with the head bolts in the center and then moves to those farther and farther from the center. This procedure helps spread the forces toward the ends of the cylinder. Refer to Figure 3739. Valve clearance allows the metal parts to expand and maintain proper operation, both when the engine is cold and at normal operating temperature. Figure A, adjustment is achieved by turning the adjusting screw. Figure B, adjustment is achieved by changing the thickness of the adjusting shim. Tech tip: watch out for wet and dry holes. Many engines, such as the small block Chevrolet V8, use head bolts that extend through the top deck of the block and end in a coolant passage. These bolt holes are called wet holes. When installing head bolts into holes that end up in the coolant passage, always use sealer on the threads of the head bolt. Some engines have head bolts that are wet, whereas others are dry because they end in solid cast iron material. Dry hole bolts do not require sealant, but they still require some oil on the threads of the bolts for lubrication. Do not put oil into a dry hole because the bolt may bottom out in the oil. The liquid oil cannot compress, so the force of the bolt being tightened is transferred to the block by hydraulic force, which can crack the block. Note: apply oil to a shop cloth and rotate the bolt in the cloth to lubricate the threads. This procedure lubricates the threads without applying too much oil. Refer to Figure 3740. Some overhead camshaft engines use valve lash adjusting shims to adjust the valve lash. A special tool is usually required to compress the valve spring so that a magnet can remove the shim. By tightening the head bolts in three steps, the head gasket has time to compress and conform to the block deck and cylinder head gasket surfaces. Follow that sequence and tighten the bolts in the following manner. Step 1. Tighten to 1/3 the specified torque. Step 2. Tighten them a second time following the torque sequence to 2/3 the specified torque. Step 3. Follow the sequence with a final tightening to the specified torque. See Figures 3741 and 3742. Tech tip: the piece of paper demonstration. Some students and beginning technicians forget the correct order to tighten head bolts or other fasteners of a component. Try the following demonstration. Place a single sheet of paper on a table. Place both hands on the paper in the center and then move your hands outward. Nothing should have happened and the paper should have not moved. Now place your hands on the paper at the ends and move them toward the center. The paper wrinkles as the hands move toward the center. This demonstration shows that the forces are moved away toward the ends of the cylinder head if the fasteners are tightened from the inside toward the outside. However, if the cylinder head bolts were tightened incorrectly, the head would likely crack due to the forces exerted during the tightening. Refer to Figure 3741, Typical Cylinder Head Tightening Sequence. Refer to Figure 3742, Examples of Cylinder Head Bolt Torquing Sequences. Tech Tip: Always exercise new bolts. New bolts and studs are manufactured by rolling the threads and heat treating. Due to this operation, the threads usually have some rough areas, which affect the clamping force on the gasket. Many engine building experts recommend that all new bolts be installed in the engine using a new or used gasket and torqued to specifications at least 5 times, except for torqued to yield bolts. This process burnishes the ramps of the threads and makes the fastener provide a more even clamping force. Using the recommended lubricant, the bolts should be torqued and removed and then torqued again. Clamping force: clamping force is the amount of force exerted on a gasket. The clamping force is not the same as the torque applied to the fastener. When tightening a bolt or nut, about 80% of the applied torque is used to overcome friction between the threads. Therefore, it is very important that the threads be clean and lubricated with the proper, specified, lubricant. Fastener consideration: because most of the torque applied to a fastener is absorbed by friction, it is extremely important that the following steps be performed. Step 1. Clean the threads of all fasteners before using. Step 2. Check service information for the specified thread lubricant. Thread lubricant: if using aftermarket bolts or studs, such as ARP, known as American Racing Products, use the lubricant and torque that the company specifies. Do not use ARP lubricant and the factory torque specifications or the fasteners are greatly over-tightened. The same applies if using thread sealant to the threads of fasteners being installed in wet holes, or holes that extend into the cooling passages. Many vehicle manufacturers recommend the use of 30-weight engine oil, SAE 30. Refer to Figure 3743, Typical Head Gasket Markings. The front means that the gasket should be at the accessory drive belt end of the block. Frequently asked question: why do both head gaskets have front marked? A common question asked by beginning technicians or students is how to install head gaskets on a V6 engine that is mounted transversely, or sideways, in the vehicle. The technician usually notices that front is marked on one gasket, and, therefore, installs that gasket on the block, on top of the forward-facing cylinder bank. Then, the technician notices that the other gasket is also marked with front. How could both be marked front? There must be some mistake. The mistake is in the terminology used. In the case of head gaskets, the front means toward the accessory drive belt end of the engine and not on the cylinder bank toward the front of the vehicle. See Figure 3743. Tech Tip: creep up on the torque value. Do not jerk or rapidly rotate a torque wrench. For best results and more even torque, slowly apply force to the torque wrench until it reaches the preset value or the designated torque. Jerking or rapidly moving the torque wrench often causes the torque to be uneven and not accurate. Torque to yield head bolts. Definition and terminology: many engines use a tightening procedure called the torque to yield, or TTY, method. The purpose of the TTY procedure is to have a more constant clamping load from bolt to bolt. This aids in head gasket sealing performance and eliminates the need for retorquing. Bolt construction: many torque to yield head bolts are made with a narrow section between the head and threads. As the bolts are tightened past their elastic limit, they yield and begin to stretch in this narrow section. Torque to yield head bolts do not become any tighter once they reach this elastic limit, as seen on the graph in Figure 3744. The torque angle method also decreases the differences in clamping force that can occur, depending on the condition or lubrication of the threads. See Figure 3745. As a result, many engine manufacturers specify new head bolts each time the head is installed. If these bolts are reused, they are likely to break during assembly or fail prematurely as the engine runs. If there is any doubt about the head bolts, replace them with new bolts. Refer to Figure 3744. Due to variations in clamping force with turning force, or torque, of head bolts, some engines specify the torque to yield procedure. The first step is to torque the bolts by an even amount, called the initial torque. Final clamping load is achieved by turning the bolt a specified number of degrees. Bolt stretch provides the proper clamping force. Refer to Figure 3745 to ensure consistent clamp force or load. Many manufacturers are recommending the torque angle or torque to yield method of tightening head bolts. The torque angle method specifies tightening fasteners to a low torque setting and then giving an additional angle of rotation. Notice that the difference in clamping force is much smaller than it would be if just a torque wrench with dirty threads were used. Torque to yield procedure. Torque to yield bolts are tightened to a specific initial torque, from 18 to 50 pound-feet, 25 to 68 nanometers. The bolts are tightened an additional specified number of degrees, following the tightening sequence. In some cases, they are turned a specified number of degrees two or three times. Some specifications limit the maximum torque that can be applied to the bolt while the degree turn is being made. Torque tables in a service manual show how much initial torque should be applied to the bolt and how many degrees the bolt should be rotated after torquing. Torque to yield head bolts should be tightened as per specified in service information. The procedure includes the following steps. Step 1. Tighten the fasteners to an initial torque in the specified sequence. Step 2. Turn the fasteners a specific number of degrees using an angle gauge, following the same sequence. Step 3. Turn the fasteners another specific number of degrees again, following the designated sequence. For example, a specified head bolt tightening specification may include initial torque, such as 44 pounds-foot, rotate 90 degrees, and rotate head bolts an additional 90 degrees, see figures 3746 and 3747. Torque angle method. The torque angle method, also called the torque turn method, does not necessarily mean torque to yield. Some engine specifications call for a beginning torque and then a specified angle, but the fastener is not designed to yield. These head bolts can often be reused. Always follow the manufacturer's recommended procedures. Refer to Figure 3746. Torque angle can be measured using a special adapter. Refer to Figure 3747, an electronic torque wrench showing the number of degrees of rotation. These very accurate and expensive torque wrenches can be programmed to display torque or number of degrees of rotation. Valve train assembly. Timing drives for OHC engines. After the head bolts have been torqued, the cam drive can be installed on overhead cam engines. This is done by aligning the timing marks of the crankshaft and camshaft drive sprockets with their respective timing marks. The location of these marks differs between engines, but the marks can be identified by looking carefully at the sprockets. See figures 3748 and 3749. The tensioner may be on either or both sides of the timing belt or chain. After the camshaft drive is engaged, rotate the crankshaft through two full revolutions. On the first full revolution, the exhaust valve is almost closed and the intake valve is just starting to open when the crankshaft timing mark aligns. At the end of the second revolution, both valves should be closed, and all the timing marks should align on most engines. This is the position the crankshaft should have when cylinder 1 is to fire. Note: always check the manufacturer's recommended timing chain installation procedure. Engines that use primary and secondary timing chains often require an exact detailed procedure for proper installation. Refer to Figure 3748. Both camshafts have to be timed on this engine, and the timing belt also drives the water pump. Refer to Figure 3749. Some timing chains have plated links that are used to correctly position the chain on the sprockets. Tech tip: soak the timing chain. Many experts recommend that a new timing chain be soaked in engine oil prior to engine assembly to help ensure full lubrication at engine startup. The timing chain is one of the last places in the engine to get lubrication when the engine first starts. This procedure may even extend the life of the chain. Hydraulic valve lifter installation. Most vehicle manufacturers recommend installing lifters without filling or pumping the lifter full of oil. If the lifter is filled with oil during engine startup, the lifter may not be able to bleed down quickly enough and the valves may be kept open. Not only does the engine not operate correctly with the valves held open, but the piston also could hit the open valves, causing serious engine damage. Most manufacturers usually specify that the lifter be lubricated. Roller hydraulic lifters can be lubricated with engine oil, whereas flat lifters require that engine assembly lube or extreme pressure, or EP, grease be applied to the base. Refer to Figure 3750. A special tool may be needed to bleed air from the hydraulic lash adjusters known as HLA, through the bleed hole. These lash adjusters are part of the valve end of the rocker arms in this example. Tech tip: watch out for different length pushrods. The very popular General Motors family of engines, including 2.8-liter, 3.1 liter, 3.4 liter, and 3.5 liter, each use different pushrod lengths for intake and exhaust valves. If the wrong pushrods are used, two things can occur. 1. The pushrods can be bent. 2. The engine runs rough because the longer pushrod prevents the valve from closing all the way. Always check service information for the exact location of the pushrods. Bleeding hydraulic lifters. Air trapped inside a hydraulic valve lifter can be easily bled by simply operating the engine at a fast idle, 2500 RPM. Normal oil flow through the lifters allow all of the air inside the lifter to be bled out. Note: some engines, such as many Nissan OHC engines, must have the air removed from the lifter before installation. This is accomplished by submerging the lifter in a container of engine oil and using a straightened paper clip to depress the oil passage check ball. Check service information if in doubt about the bleeding procedure for the vehicle being serviced. See Figure 3750. Timing chains and gears installation. On cam and block, OHV, engines, the timing gears or chain and sprocket can be installed after the crankshaft and camshaft. The timing marks should be aligned according to the factory specified marks. See Figure 3751. The crankshaft should be rotated several times to see that the camshaft and timing gears or chain rotate freely. The timing mark alignment should be rechecked at this time. If the engine is equipped with a slinger ring, it should also be installed on the crankshaft, in front of the crankshaft gear. Refer to Figure 3751. Timing chain and gears can be installed after the crankshaft and camshaft have been installed and the timing marks are aligned with cylinder 1 at top dead center. OHV engine lifter and pushrod installation. The outside of the lifters and the lifter bores in the block should be cleaned and coated with assembly lubricant. The lifters are installed and the lifter bores and the pushrods put in place. There are different length pushrods on some engines. Make sure that the pushrods are installed in the proper location. The rocker arms are then put in place, aligning with the valves and pushrods. Rocker arm shafts should have their retaining bolts tightened a little at a time, alternating between the retaining bolts. This keeps the shaft from bending as the rocker arm pushes some of the valves open. Hydraulic lifter adjustment. The retaining nut on some rocker arms mounted on studs can be tightened to a specified torque. The rocker arm stud has a shoulder on this type of rocker assembly. The rocker arm is adjusted correctly at this torque when the valve tip has the correct height. Other types of rocker arms require tightening the nut to a position that centers the hydraulic lifter. The general procedure includes the following steps. Step 1. Rotate the engine until cylinder 1 is at TDC on the compression stroke to be assured that both the intake and exhaust valves are on the base circle of the cam lobes. Step 2. Tighten the retaining nut to the point that all free lash is gone and the pushrod cannot be easily rotated. See Figure 3752. Step 3. From this point, the retaining nut is tightened by a specified amount, such as 3/4 of a turn or 1 1/2 turns. Note: this method usually results in about 3 threads showing above the adjusting nut on a stock small block Chevrolet V8 equipped with flat bottom hydraulic lifters. Step 4. Rotate the engine until the next cylinder in the firing order is at TDC on the compression stroke. The valves on this next cylinder are adjusted in the same manner as those on cylinder 1. This procedure is repeated on each cylinder following the engine firing order until all the valves have been adjusted. Always follow the specified procedure found in service information. Refer to Figure 3752. With the lifter resting on the base circle of the cam, zero lash is achieved by tightening the rocker arm lock nut until the pushrod no longer rotates freely. Solid lifter adjustment. The valve clearance or lash must be set on a solid lifter engine, so that the valves can positively seat. Check service information for the specified adjustment sequence to follow to set the lash. If this is not available, then the following procedure can be used on all engines requiring valve lash adjustment. The valve lash is adjusted with the valves completely closed. See Figure 3753. The procedure is similar to that used to adjust hydraulic lifters that are adjustable except that a feeler gauge is used to check the lash. The same valve lash adjustment sequence is used on OHC engines. Those engines with rocker arms or with adjustable finger follower pivots are adjusted in the same way as pushrod engines with rocker arms. Refer to Figure 3753. Most adjustable valves use a nut to keep the adjustment from changing. Therefore, to adjust the valves, the nut has to be loosened and the screw rotated until the proper valve clearance is achieved. Then the screw should be held while tightening the lock nut to keep the adjustment from changing. Double-check the valve clearance after tightening the nut. Final assembly. Manifold installation. The intake manifold gasket for a V-type engine may be a one-piece gasket or it may have several pieces. V-type engines with open-type manifolds have a cover over the lifter valley. The cover may be a separate part or it may be part of a one-piece intake manifold gasket. Closed-type intake manifolds on V-type engines require gasket pieces, or end seals, at the front and rear of the intake manifold. See Figure 3754. Inline engines usually have a one-piece intake manifold gasket. The intake manifold is put in place over the gaskets. Use a contact adhesive to hold the gasket and end seal if there is a chance they might slip out of place. Install the bolts and tighten to the specified torque following the correct tightening sequence. Only some exhaust manifolds use gaskets. The exhaust manifold operates at very high temperatures, so there is usually some expansion and contraction movement in the manifold to head joint. It is very important to use attachment bolts, cap screws, and clamps of the correct type and length. See Figure 3755. They must be properly torqued to avoid both leakage and cracks. Note: if the exhaust manifold gasket has a metal facing on one side, place the metal facing toward the head. Timing cover installation: the timing cover with seal installed in the gasket are placed over the timing gears and/or chain and sprockets. The attaching bolts are loosely installed to allow the damper hub to align with the cover as it fits in the seal. The damper is installed on the crankshaft. On some engines, it is a press fit, and on others it is held with a large center bolt. After the damper is secured, the attaching bolts on the timing cover can be tightened to the specified torque. Refer to Figure 3754. This intake manifold gasket includes end seals and a full shield cover for the valley to keep hot engine oil from heating the intake manifold. Refer to Figure 3755. An exhaust manifold gasket is used on some engines. It seals the exhaust manifold to the cylinder head. Refer to Figure 3756. A 1/8 to 3/16 of an inch, or 3 to 5 millimeters, bead of RTV silicon on a parting surface with silicon going around the bolt hole. Most timing covers are installed with a gasket, but some use RTV sealer in place of the gasket. A bead of RTV silicon 1/8 to 3/16 inch in diameter is put on the clean sealing surface. See Figure 3756. Sealing a cover using RTV silicon usually includes the following steps. Step 1. Encircle the bolt holes with the sealant. Step 2. Install the cover before the silicon begins to cure so that the uncured silicon bonds to both surfaces. Step 3. While installing the cover, do not touch the silicon bead. Otherwise the bead might be displaced and cause a leak. Step 4. Carefully press the cover into place. Do not slide the cover. After it is in place. Step 5. Install the assembly bolts finger tight, and let the silicon cure for about 30 minutes before tightening the cover bolts. When installing cast covers, anaerobic compound, such as Loctite, is often used as a gasket substitute. Vibration damper installation. Vibration dampers are seated in place by one of three methods. The damper hub of some engines is pulled into place using the hub attaching bolt. The second method uses a special installation tool that screws into the attaching bolt hole to pull the hub into place. The tool is removed and the attaching bolt is installed and torqued. The last method is used on engines that have no attaching bolt. These hubs depend on a press fit to hold the hub on the crankshaft. The hub is seated using a special tube type driver. Check service information for the exact procedure and tool to use. Caution: always use the vibration damper installation tool as specified in service information. Failure to use the correct tool and installation procedure could result in damage to damper, crankshaft, and thrust bearings. Oil pump installation: when an engine is rebuilt, the oil pump should be replaced with a new pump and oil pickup screen. Most vehicle manufacturers recommend that the oil pump and screen be replaced rather than cleaned. This ensures positive lubrication and long pump life. Oil pump gears should be coated with assembly lubricant before the cover is put on the pump. This provides initial lubrication, and it primes the pump so that it draws the oil from the pan when the lubrication system is first operated. Torque the oil pump fasteners to factory specifications. See Figure 3757. Refer to Figure 3757, a beam type torque wrench being used to tighten the oil pump pickup assembly to factory specification. Refer to Figure 3758, using clay to determine the oil pan to oil pickup clearance, which should be about 1/4 inch. Tech tip: check the oil pump pickup to oil pan clearance. Whenever installing the oil pan on a rebuilt engine, it is wise to check the clearance between the oil pump pickup and the bottom of the oil pan. This distance should be 3/16 to 3/8 inch, or 5 to 9 millimeters. To check the clearance, two methods can be used. Method 1, with the engine upside down and the oil pump and pickup installed, measure the distance from the oil pan rail to the top, actually the bottom, of the oil pump pickup. Then measure the distance from the oil pan rail to the bottom of the oil pan and subtract the two measurements to get the clearance. Method 2, place about half of an inch, or 13 millimeters, of modeling clay on the pickup of the oil pump. Then, temporarily install the oil pan with a gasket. Press down on the oil pan to compress the modeling clay. Remove the oil pan and measure the thickness of the clay. This thickness is the oil pan to oil pump pickup clearance. See Figure 3758. Oil pan installation. The oil pan should be checked and straightened as necessary. See Figure 3759. With the oil pump in place, the oil pan gaskets are properly positioned. The oil pan is carefully placed over the gaskets. All oil pan bolts should be started into their holes before any are tightened. The bolts should be alternately snugged up and then they should be properly tightened to factory specifications. Always follow the instructions that come with the gasket for best results. Water pump installation. A reconditioned, rebuilt, or new water pump should be used. Once gaskets are fitted in place, the pump is secured with assembly bolts tightened to the correct torque. A new thermostat should be installed, being careful to check that the wax pellet side of the thermostat faces toward the engine. The thermostat housing with the proper gasket is installed, and the retaining bolts are tightened to the proper torque. Refer to Figure 3759. Using a hammer to straighten the gasket rail surface of the oil pan before installing a new gasket. When the retaining bolts are tightened, some distortion of sheet metal covers occurs. If the area around the bolt holes is not straightened, leaks can occur with the new gasket. Refer to Figure 3760. Torque paint applied to the head of the fastener indicates that it has been properly torqued to factory specification. Frequently asked question. What is torque paint? Whenever a major fastener is tightened to the proper torque at the assembly plant, a dab of paint is applied to the head of the fastener to indicate that it was properly torqued. This is part of the quality control procedure used to help ensure that all fasteners are properly tightened to factory specification. See Figure 3760. Engine painting. Painting an engine helps prevent rust and corrosion and makes the engine look new. Standard engine paints with original colors are usually available at automotive parts stores. Engine paints should be used, rather than other types of paints. Pre-lubricating the engine, with oil in the engine and the distributor, if equipped, out of the engine, oil pressure should be established before the engine is started. This can be done on most engines by rotating the oil pump using an electric drive. This ensures that oil is delivered to all parts of the engine before the engine is started. Adapters are available that allow an electric drill motor to rotate the oil pump. Engines that do not drive the oil pump with a distributor require the use of a pressurized pre-lubing tool, such as the General Motor recommended J45299 or the Goodson PL40. To use the pre-oiler, fill the unit with engine oil and then, using compressed air, pressurize the tank to about 80 psi, or 550 kilopascals. The hose from the tank is then connected to the oil pressure sensing unit port on the engine block and the valve is turned on to force oil through the engine. See Figure 3761. Refer to Figure 3761. Oil should be seen flowing to each rocker arm as shown. Case study. Oops. After overhauling a big block Ford V8 engine, the technician used an electric drill to rotate the oil pump with a pressure gauge connected to the oil pressure sending unit hole. When the electric drill was turned on, oil pressure would start to increase to about 10 psi, then drop to zero. In addition, the oil was very aerated, or full of air. Replacing the oil pump did not solve the problem. After hours of troubleshooting and disassembly, it was discovered that an oil gallery plug had been left out underneath the intake manifold. The oil pump was working correctly and pumped oil throughout the engine and out of the end of the unplugged oil gallery. It did not take long for the oil pan to empty and the oil pump began drawing in air which aerated the oil, which caused the oil pressure to drop. Installing the gallery plug solved the problem. Note: many OHC engines use an oil passage check valve in the block near the deck. The purpose of this valve is to hold oil in the cylinder head around the camshaft and lifters when the engine is stopped. Failure to reinstall this check valve can cause the valve train to be noisy after engine startup. Summary. The complaint: newly overhauled engine lost oil pressure shortly after startup. The cause: an oil gallery plug was found to be missing. The correction: the missing plug was installed and after reassembly, the engine oil pressure was normal. Refer to Figure 3762. Heat tabs can be purchased from engine supply companies. Tech tip: install heat tabs. The wise engine builder should install a heat tab to the back of the cylinder heads. A heat tab uses a special heat-sensitive metal in the center of a mild steel disc. If the temperature of the cylinder head exceeds 250 degrees Fahrenheit, or 121 degrees Celsius, the center of the tab melts and flows out, indicating that the engine overheated. See Figure 3762. Dynamometer testing. Purposes: the purposes for using an engine dynamometer after an engine is assembled are varied. The testing. 1. Allows the completed engine to be started and run to operating temperature. 2. Permits checking for possible problems or leaks before the engine is installed in a vehicle. 3. Allows the piston rings to seat and the engine to be partially broken in before being installed in a vehicle. 4. Permits the technician to determine the output of the engine. Types of dynamometers. Basic types of dynamometers include a brake type, where a variable load is applied to the engine and the computer calculates the power output based on the readings taken from the load cell or strain gauge and engine RPM. Most brake types use a water impeller to create the load on the engine. See Figure 3763. An inertia type, which measures engine power by using the engine to accelerate a known mass load. An inertia type dynamometer is most often used to measure the power of an engine at the drive wheels of the vehicle. See Figure 3764. Refer to Figure 3763. A dynamometer measures engine torque by applying a resistive force to the engine and measuring the force applied. Water is being used as the resistive load on this dynamometer. Refer to Figure 3764. A chassis dynamometer is used to measure torque at the drive wheels. There is a power loss through the drivetrain, so the measured values are about 20% less than when measuring engine output at the flywheel, using an engine dynamometer. Terminology. Numbers allow values to be assigned to virtually everything being measured or tested. The numbers help identify, quantify, and compare variables and performance. Two types of data include: 1. Measured values, taken directly from the engine, using sensors that read the actual data. 2. Calculated values, those found by using basic numbers and a formula to obtain them. Measured values. Measured units are those that are obtained directly from sensors and include: torque. As the name implies, this is the amount of twisting force that the engine puts out at the crank flange. Typically, this is measured in foot-pounds. Note: dynamometers only measure torque output of an engine. Horsepower is not measured directly, but is instead a calculated value. Fuel flow. Mass flow rate of fuel is calculated by the number of gallons per hour times pounds per gallon and is measured in pounds per hour. To determine this value, the specific gravity of the fuel has to be measured and entered into the computer prior to the engine test so the program can calculate the fuel flow. Make sure there is enough fuel delivery for the engine by checking the gallons per hour prior to running each engine. Proper pressure does not mean that there is enough volume being delivered to the engine, especially under load conditions. Manifold pressure. Measured in inches of mercury, this value is called manifold vacuum in a normally aspirated engine. Oil pressure. This should be about 10 psi per 1000 rpm. Air inlet pressure. Core value used to calculate the correction factor during the run, also referred to as dry bulb temperature. Dry bulb temperature is the temperature of a room where the thermometer is shielded from moisture. This reduces the effect of evaporation of moisture from the thermometer, which could affect the temperature reading. Fuel temperature. Used to calculate the density of fuel for fuel flow values. Oil temperature. Very important in run-to-run comparisons. Typically, the hotter the oil, the more horsepower an engine makes, up to a point. Oil that is too hot loses its cooling capability, as well as some of its lubricating properties. Engine coolant temperature. This reading is important to monitor as a safety limit to help prevent possible engine damage if it goes too high. Transducers are needed to measure the basic values. A transducer is a device that is able to convert various input signals, such as pressures and temperature, into an electrical signal that a computer can recognize. Typical dynamometer transducers include magnetic pickups, see Figure 3765. Load cells. Strain gauge flow meters. Rotary potentiometers or rheostats. Thermocouples, and linear variable displacement transducers known as LVDT. Calculated numbers. Calculated numbers are those that are obtained by using the measured values and processing them through software to obtain the following. Calculated horsepower. Horsepower is calculated from the torque and engine RPM readings as measured by the dynamometer. Corrected torque. This is a calculated number determined by the actual torque multiplied by the correction factor. This is an important number and the reading should show wide and flat band of torque over a broad engine speed range. Frictional horsepower. This can best be thought of as the power required to rotate the engine without firing and without pumping losses. Volumetric efficiency. This is a measure of the engine cylinder filling efficiency. 100% represents filling a cylinder to its total swept volume. On a race engine, it is quite normal to see over 100% volumetric efficiency. Mechanical efficiency. This is the ratio of the engine's frictional torque divided by its corrected output torque. A value of 100% would indicate that the engine had no frictional losses. Refer to Figure 3765, a magnetic pickup being used to monitor engine speed when the vehicle is being tested on a chassis dynamometer. Standards, for best results, perform testing on nice days with low relative humidity and high atmospheric pressure. These factors have a huge effect on the amount of air that the engine can breathe in, which in turn can dramatically affect horsepower readings. Testing on nice days is not always possible, so using corrected data allows the technician to compare test results from day to day and dynamometer to dynamometer. A correction factor is a value that is multiplied to the data values so that engine performance can be compared, regardless of weather conditions. Over the years, there have been many different correction factors specified by the Society of Automotive Engineers known as SAE, including SAE J606, SAE J607. Using this correction factor results in higher numbers than if using other correction factors, mainly due to the higher barometric pressure standard used. SAE J1349, SAE J1739. There are subtle differences between each of the testing standards. The result after the correction factor has been applied is called corrected torque. From the corrected torque values, the other units, such as horsepower, can be calculated. Refer to Figure 3766. Because horsepower is calculated from measured torque, the horsepower and torque curves should always cross at exactly 5,252 RPM. Tech tip. Look at the crossing point. All dynamometers measure torque of an engine, then calculate the horsepower. Horsepower is torque multiplied by engine speed, RPM, divided by 5,252, a constant. Therefore, all graphs should show that the two curves for horsepower and torque should be the same at 5,252 RPM. See Figure 3766. Tech tip. Compare dyno results from the same dyno only. There are too many variables between dynamometers to allow a fair comparison when testing an engine. If changes are made to the engine, try to use the same dynamometer and use the same correction factors. Using another dynamometer can result in readings that may not be equivalent when testing on the original tester. Final notes. Corrected numbers are to be applied to wide open throttle runs only. Corrected numbers apply only to normally aspirated engines and are not to be used for turbocharged or supercharged engines. Double check that the spark timing is set relative to TDC. Double check that the engine has good electrical grounds and adequate voltage. Be sure to have enough good fuel before starting to test an engine. Do not use any gasoline older than 90 days. Steps involved in using a plastic gauge. Step 1, clean the main bearing journal and then place a strip of plastic gauge material across the entire width of the journal. Step 2, carefully install the main bearing cap with the bearing installed. Step 3, torque main bearing cap bolts to factory specifications. Step 4, carefully remove the bearing cap hand, using the package that contained the plastic gauge strips, measure the width of the compressed material. The gauge is calibrated in thousandths of the inch. Repeat for each main bearing. Step 5, to measure rod bearing oil clearance, start by removing the rod cap. Step 6, clean the rod bearing journal and then place a strip of plastic gauge across the entire width of the journal. Step 7, torque the rod bearing cap nuts to factory specifications. Step 8, remove the rod cap and measure the oil clearance using the markings on the plastic gauge package. The wider the compressed gauge material is, the narrower the bearing oil clearance. Repeat for all rod bearings. Review questions. Question 1. What are the items that need to be installed as part of the short block assembly? Question 2. How is crankshaft end play measured? Question 3. Why should Teflon seals not be oiled prior to being installed? Question 4. Why are torque T-yield fasteners used for many head bolts? Question 5. What are the measured and the calculated values as a result of testing an engine on a dynamometer? Chapter Quiz. Question 1. Technician A says that studs should be installed finger tight. Technician B says that studs must be installed using a thread locker such as Loctite. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 2. What can be used to check that heads are at the correct angle? For the intake manifold on a V-type engine? A. Metal rule. B. Angle gauge. C. Tape measure. D. Dial indicator. Question 3. What is true about checking bearing clearance using plastic gauge? A. The journal should be clean and oil-free. B. The cap should be torqued to factory specifications. C. The wider the strip means the narrower the oil clearance. D. All of the above. Question 4. Service information states that say 30 engine oil should be used on the threads of the head bolts before installation and torquing. Technician A says that SAE5W30 will work. Technician B says that SAE10W30 will work. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 5. Technician A says that the torque applied to the head bolts is the same as the clamping force on the gasket. Technician B says that the clamping force is the force actually applied to the surfaces of the gasket. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 6. Head gasket installation is being discussed. Technician A says that the surface finish of the cylinder head or block deck is very important for proper sealing to occur. Technician B says that if front is marked on a head gasket, the mark should be installed near the accessory drive belt end of the engine. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 7. The TTY method of tightening bolts involves which of these processes? A. Turning all bolts the same number of turns. B. Torquing to specifications and loosening by a specified number of degrees. C. Torquing to 1/2 specifications, then to 3/4 torque, then to full torque. D. Turning bolts a specified number of degrees after initial torque. Question 8. Before starting a rebuilt engine, what procedure should be followed? A. Rotate the engine by hand 3 turns backwards, then 3 turns forward. B. Pre-lube the engine with a pressurized tool. C. Install pushrod deflectors. D. Tap lightly on all the head bolts with a small hammer. Question 9. An engine dynamometer measures A. Torque. B. Horsepower. C. Both horsepower and torque. D. Fuel economy. Question 10. If the torque and horsepower readings are graphed, where do the curves cross, or equal each other? A. Never. B. At peak horsepower, which can vary from engine to engine. C. At peak torque, which can vary from engine to engine. D. At 5,252 RPM. End of chapter 37.